Hare Krishna. So yesterday we discussed about the time Krishna and Sudama spent together at the ashram of Sandipani Muni. So now, after giving this description, Krishna understands that Sudama has brought something with him. So at this stage, Shukadeva Goswami describes that Krishna is the all-knowing Supreme Lord, who is the Paramatma, and he understands that Sudama has brought this flat rice for him and is eager to taste this nectar of Sudama's love. So we are going to discuss three aspects of this pastime today. First is, how does Krishna take care of his devotees? Second is, that when the devotee satisfies Krishna, then how does he benefit, and how the world benefits, how everyone benefits? And thirdly, how does the devotee get attracted to Krishna? So first part is, Krishna is getting attracted to devotee, and then there is the devotee getting attracted to Krishna. So now, in the series of verses, Shukadeva Goswami is revealing how Krishna is attracted to the love of Sudama, and what are the different reasons, what are the different ways in which the Supreme Lord becomes attracted to a devotee. How does he take care of his devotee? So the first aspect, he says, he gives five different aspects of this. The first aspect, he says, is that Krishna is, number one, he is all-knowing. He knows past, present and future. He is omniscient. So he says, Brahmanyo Brahmanam Krishna Krishne Prahasan Priyam. So Krishna understands that Sudama has brought something for me to reciprocate with me, an offering of love. And so he is described here as Sarvagya, means omniscient. So first of all, Krishna knows the devotee's heart. Krishna knows what the devotee wants to reciprocate with him, in what mood, what is his motivation. And therefore he is described here as Sarvagya, all-knowing. So Krishna tastes the intention and the motivation which a devotee offers love to him, rather than the external objects and situations. So Krishna is known as Bhavagrahi, and therefore, first of all, he knows and understands what is in a person's heart. And the Acharyas give, Jiva Goswami gives the explanation about the effects of offensive chanting, and he says that the first effect of offensive chanting is Kautilya, or crookedness, and he gives the example of Duryodhan. That Duryodhan was having this kind of a character, that he was crooked. And so although externally he was trying to impress Krishna in so many ways, but Krishna being all-knowing Supreme Lord, he could understand his heart. And so we have this example that Duryodhan was often trying to flatter Krishna and please Krishna, but because he was against the Pandavas, Krishna never took him seriously. And in fact, Duryodhan had made all arrangements for Krishna to eat at his place, had made elaborate feast, and Krishna arrived there, and all of this feast was offered in golden plates, and Krishna refused to touch even a morsel. And Krishna said, a person eats at someone's house only in two situations. Either he is hungry or he has love. And in your case, there is neither. I am neither hungry nor you have love for me, nor I have love for you. And therefore, Duryodhan, in spite of his best efforts, could not impress Krishna. And in fact, Krishna made sure that he foiled Duryodhan's plans repeatedly. And Gandhari had called Duryodhan to come so that she could transfer all of her power to him. And she had requested him to come completely naked, without any clothes on. And in the middle of the night, Duryodhan was walking through the forest, but Krishna, who is all-knowing Supreme Lord, wanted to foil his plan, so he just manifested from behind the trees in front of Duryodhan. And Duryodhan was totally embarrassed, because he didn't expect to meet anyone on the way like this. And Krishna looked at Duryodhan and said, "Duryodhan, come on, what is this? You're supposed to be the king. Why are you traveling like this?" And Duryodhan said, "My mother has called." He said, "Come on, you're not a small baby. That mother has called and you're going like this without any clothes on. Just imagine what Bhima will think if he hears this." And so Krishna somehow convinced Duryodhan to cover his thighs. And then he went in front of his mother, and Gandhari was shocked that after she opened her eyes and all of her power was transferred, she said, "I told you to come without any clothes on." And Duryodhan said, "What to do? Krishna was there. And Krishna spoke to me like this." There is another example that there was a mirror which the Dwarka Vasis had. And anyone keeps the mirror in front of their face, they could see who is the person who is thinking of me the most at this stage. So if you wanted to know who is thinking about me, then you just keep that mirror in front of you. And then you could see, okay, that person's face would come in that mirror. Thank God we don't have such mirrors now. Full day would go just in seeing that. Jai Shri Gaur Nithai ki, Radha Gokulananda ji ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki. So then, one day Krishna was holding that mirror in front of his face. And naturally, you would imagine that who is thinking of Krishna the most, Yashoda Mai or Nanda Maharaj or the gopis. But whose face came in that? Shakuni. Shakuni's face got manifested in that. And Krishna told the other residents of Dwarka that because Shakuni is the advisor for the Kauravas and he knows I am the advisor for the Pandavas, he is constantly thinking about what plans I must be making and advising the Pandavas so that he can counteract that. He's constantly absorbed in my thoughts, but in a negative way. So Krishna is omniscient. He knows the hearts of all the souls. And therefore, a devotee does not have to worry about whether Krishna will understand him or not, because he knows the heart of every conditioned soul. Just like one devotee, he writes a beautiful prayer in which he says, "When I hear that Krishna is Bhakta Vatsal, I become very afraid, because I am not Bhakta, I am not devotee. So how I will receive his mercy? But then I also hear there is another name of Krishna, and that is Dinbandhu, that he is the friend of the fallen. And hearing that name of Krishna, I become inspired, because I am fallen." So therefore, if someone sincerely tries to please Krishna, practices the process of Krishna consciousness, he does not have to worry, because Krishna is omniscient. He knows how a devotee is sincerely trying to please him and serve him. So here, Krishna knows that Sudama has come with a sincere intention, just on the instruction of his wife, and he has not come here to beg anything from me for his own sake. And so, Shukadeva Goswami says, "Premna nirikshamanena prekshan khalu satam gati." So Krishna, he smiles, and his smile turns into laughter. And Krishna is described here as satam gati, the supreme most shelter of all the devotees. And why Krishna smiles? Because he understands. He looks at Sudama and says, "Okay, I know what you are hiding. And then that smile turns into laughter as Krishna thinks, you are thinking that I do not know what you are carrying, but I know everything, and within a short time I am going to bestow upon you such riches which you cannot even imagine. And thinking like this, Krishna is smiling and laughing. So the first aspect of Krishna's reciprocation with a devotee is, he knows the devotee's heart. Then, the second aspect of Krishna's reciprocation is, he favors the devotee at any cost. Krishna is eager to favor a devotee, and therefore, he is always eager to reciprocate with his cherished servants in every possible way. And this is a special characteristic feature of Krishna, and therefore he is known as Bhakta Vatsala. So Vatsa means chest or Vakshasthal, and La means Lati, to bring. So Vatsala means to bring a cherished or precious object and hold it close to the chest. Anything which we like and we want to protect, we hold it close to our chest. So Krishna is known as Bhakta Vatsal because he likes the devotees so much, he has so much of love for the devotees, he just picks up the devotee from any condition and brings them and keeps them close to his chest so that no one and nothing can harm the devotee. Therefore he is known as Bhakta Vatsal. And thus, Krishna is always eager to favor his devotee. So the difference between the conditioned soul and the Supreme Lord, that the conditioned soul is always eager to catch someone doing wrong, and Krishna is always eager to catch the devotee doing right. And he is always eager to favor such a devotee, always eager to help the devotees, serve the devotees. In Vrindavan, there is this pastime that Krishna would walk without shoes. And Yashoda Mai requested Krishna that now we are going to make nice shoes for you, and you should wear those shoes, and then you go out for grazing the cows, you should be wearing these shoes with you. And Krishna said that, my dear mother, I have these 9 lakh cows whom I am supposed to take out. And these cows, they do not have any shoes with them. And they are my loving devotees, they are my loving associates. And how is it possible for me to wear shoes when these cows and calves don't have shoes? So I will only wear shoes on the condition that you make shoes for all of these 9 lakh cows. And then I will go. And Yashoda Mai said, how is it possible, Krishna, to make shoes for all of these 9 lakh cows? Not possible. And so Krishna said, then I will also graze without wearing any shoes. And then in the barn, the cows and the calves came to know that Krishna has come upon this decision, that he is not going to wear shoes. So the cows also from their side decided to reciprocate, that all through the night they traveled along Raja, and with their hooves just smashed to powder all the various rocks and stones and all the little thorns which were there, they all crushed it, so that when Krishna walks on the ground of Raja, he will not experience any pain. And therefore the dust in Raja is very, very soft. And hence, we can see that Krishna is always eager to favor and reciprocate with his devotee, because that is the nature of the soul, to love and serve Krishna. Jivera Swarupoi Krishner Nityadas. The soul is eternally servant of Krishna, eternally serving Krishna in the spiritual world. Just like a few years back, one of the ISKCON devotees, he visited one printing press in Bengal regarding some printing of a book. And then when he went to this printing press, he found that one of the examination papers was also being printed for the 9th or 10th standard for the children. So then he just saw one copy of the examination paper. And then one of the questions which was asked was, Tomar ki porichoy? The question was, who are you? What is your identity? That was the question asked in the question paper. So the teacher was also there who had said the question paper. And so this devotee asked this teacher, okay, you are asking this question to your students, you know, in an exam. What is your identity? Tumar ki parichay. So what is the answer you expect? So they said, the teacher said, they can either write, I am Bengali, I am Indian, I am Hindu, I am this, I am that. All of these things we will give marks. So he said, if they write, I am servant of Krishna, I am Krishner Nitya Das, what will you give? He said, we'll give zero. No marks for this, because that is not in the syllabus. That is not there in the textbook. The textbook contains these things, and therefore that is what is the recommended answer. And this is the situation in India, which is supposed to be the land of dharma. And we find that this concept that we are all eternal servants of God is not being taught in the name of secularism. As someone was saying that in the name of secularism, all talk of religion has been kicked out. So they have taken the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita verse in different ways. Sarva dharman parityajya. Give up all religion. Take away all mention of religion from schools and colleges, and do not allow the children to learn what is their eternal identity. So the second aspect is that Krishna is eager to reciprocate with the devotee and favor the devotee. And third aspect of Krishna's love is Krishna accepts the love of his devotees. And so Krishna now explains to Sudama that, my dear Sudama, a devotee who brings an offering of love is so dear to me. In fact, I am willing to accept the most insignificant offering from a devotee, but I would not accept the most magnificent offering even from a non-devotee. And then Krishna speaks the same verse as he speaks in the Bhagavad Gita. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti upahartam ashnami. So the same verse, exact same verse, comes in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam also. That if anyone offers to me with love and devotion leaf, flower, fruit or water, I accept it. So here the word bhaktya comes two times. So someone may think, why the word bhakti is used twice? Is it redundant? No. Krishna just wants to emphasize that if someone offers to me with love, with devotion, I am eager to accept it. In fact, I become so enchanted by the devotee's love that ashnami means eat, that even if a devotee offers a flower, I am so bewildered by the love of my devotee that I may even put the flower in my mouth and may eat it, because the devotee's love is so intoxicating. So therefore the third aspect of Krishna's reciprocation is Krishna overlooks all kinds of faults in a devotee's offering. He overlooks all kinds of discrepancies which may be there, and he just accepts the mood, the love, the devotion with which the devotee makes the offering. And therefore in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is described that a person who is intelligent and understands the knowledge of Sanskrit, he may chant all the pronunciation properly. And it is described that dhiro vadati vishnaya, dhiro vadati vishnave murkho vadati vishnaya ubhayam tu samam punyam bhavagrahi janardana. That murkho vadati vishnaya. So when you offer something to the Lord, then it is generally chanted in the dative case, in the chaturthi. Like you say, Ramaya namaha, Krishnaya namaha, Ganeshaya namaha. And that is for words which end with A. But words which end with U, it declines in a different way. There is a totally different way of declining, and it actually is known as Vishnave Namaha. So because you say Ramaya Krishnaya, so when Vishnu comes, someone may think it is Vishnaya. So Murkho Vadati Vishnaya. So someone who doesn't know Sanskrit may chant Vishnaya Namaha. And Dhiro Vadati Vishnave. And someone who knows Sanskrit will chant the right pronunciation, Om Vishnave Namaha. But Ubhayam Tu Samam Punyam. Both will get the same benefit if they are offering with the right mood and devotion, because Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana. Krishna accepts the bhava, the mood with which devotee makes the offering. So therefore, patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati. So if one offers with love and devotion to Krishna, Krishna accepts that mood of a devotee. In Narsingha Puran, there is this pastime of a person who was not a devotee, but who had only heard about Krishna, heard about the Lord and his pastimes in his family. And he had spent his whole life in sense gratification. And he was going one evening to meet his beloved. And he was carrying with him some flower bouquet. And as he was traveling, suddenly there was a storm. And he was traveling by the side of the beach. And there was a flood. And the water started rising. And then suddenly he was overwhelmed with his water. He was about to drown. And as he was drowning, his hand was just above, and he was thinking that, I won't be able to give this flower to my beloved. Now the time of my death has come, and I heard from my childhood that we should make some offering to Krishna, and I also heard so many pandits chanting so many mantras. So let me just offer this flower to the Supreme Lord Narayan at this stage, since now nothing else can be done. So he took that flower and then threw it in the sky and said, Narayanam Arpanamastu. Om Narayanam Arpanamastu. And in this way, he just at the last moment chanted the name of Narayan, offered this flower to Narayan, and he died. And he was brought to Yamraj. He came in front of the Yamadutas. And Yamraj said that since you chanted the name of Narayan at the time of death, you said Narayanam Arpanamastu, and you offered this one flower, therefore we are offering you a choice. You can go to the outskirts of the heavenly planets, not the inside. Outside there is one nice garden, and you can spend some time in the garden for a very brief period of time, and then we will drag you to hell for the remaining period. So you can just decide where you want to go first. First you want to go through the hellish conditions and get punished, or you want to go to heaven and then experience that outskirts of the heavenly gardens. And he said, I will rather prefer to go to the outskirts of this garden, and then I will go to hell. So he was immediately taken and escorted. And then there was this garden. And as soon as he entered the garden, there were some guards who were guarding with swords in their hand. And this person just snatched the sword from their hands and started cutting all the different flowers in the forest and started chanting, Krishna Arpanamastu, Narayana, Govinda Arpanamastu. And each of the flower he was just chanting so many names. And immediately the time for his stay there was over. And Yamraj said, hey, your karma has changed again. That because you chanted so many names, finally, all of those reactions of sin have been destroyed, and therefore we no longer have any control over you. So he just released him. So Narsingha Puran gives this evidence that you offer a flower to the Lord, and in any consciousness, if you just understand that yes, the Lord will accept it, even if one is coming from a sinful background, he will get the benefit. What to speak of someone offers with love, with bhakti. In Jagannath Puri, there is this pastime of one devotee called Dasiya. Dasiya was a devotee who was from a lower class, and he was not allowed to enter the temple. And he had brought some coconuts to offer to the Lord And when he came to offer those coconuts to the deities, he was not allowed to enter inside the temple. And so he just had this basket of coconuts outside. And he was praying to Lord Jagannath that I have brought this for your pleasure. And in the Shastras it is declared that patram pushpam phalam, that you bring any fruit and you accept it. I have brought so many coconuts. But why nobody is accepting it? And as he was saying like this, suddenly the whole crowd saw all of these coconuts flying into the sky and then traveling through the skyway straight into the altar. And all the guards were watching, and these coconuts were just flying at full speed. Can you imagine? If someone brings offering like this and it goes like this, we'll get bewildered. What's happening? And then all of these coconuts were accepted by Lord Jagannath. And when the guards saw that Dasya's whole basket is empty, they understood he must be a great devotee and allowed him to go inside and take darshan of Lord Jagannath. So in this way, Lord Jagannath forcibly brought his devotee close to him and accepted his offering, fulfilling his promise. Purushottam Maharaj tells this story about one devotee, Mahapatra Pujari, how Lord Jagannath saved him from a certain discrepancy or fault of his. So what happened was, the king arrived at that spot towards the end of the night's darshan. So night darshan was over, they were about to put the Lord to rest, and the king arrived. And the other pujari said, the king has come, we must offer him garland. So bring a Mahaprasad garland. But no Mahaprasad garland was there, because the last garland had already been used. There was only one garland, and that was around the pujari's neck, because he had taken out the garland and put it around his neck. So when he heard that the king has come, he knew that if the king comes here, he will definitely demand that garland and I'll be in trouble. So he took his own garland, put it back on Jagannath. And then when the king came, the king said, give me that garland. So he took out that garland from Jagannath and put it on the king. So the king came back, thinking that I have received the garland of Lord. So when the king came back to his palace, he inspected that, he was just taking that garland and smelling it, thinking, so wonderful, such a mercy I received. The Lord's mercy is there. This is Lord Jagannath's Mahaprasad garland. And as he was smelling, suddenly some hair entered his nostril. And he thought, my God, from where hair has come? And then he observed that there was a strand of hair. And he said, how can hair be in Lord Jagannath's garland? It is not possible. There is definitely some contamination. So immediately called for that pujari and said, how this hair came in this garland? You're not worshipping properly? How this contamination came? And the pujari got bewildered, because he knew that if he says that he actually put his own garland back on Jagannath, he'll be finished. So he said, you don't know, recently Lord Jagannath is having long hair. And the king said, really? I never knew that. Said, no, yes. It's been quite some time. He has grown hair, and therefore some part of that hair must have come. So the king said, tomorrow, the first thing in the morning, I am coming for the darshan, and I want to touch and feel the hair of Lord Jagannath. So be ready. And if the hair is not there, you be ready. And then, all night, this pujari could not sleep. And he was just chanting the Lord's name, saying, my dear Lord, please forgive me. I don't know what happened. I got bewildered. First of all, I made this mistake of putting my own Mahaprasad on you back. And then, second mistake I made, I told this lie to the king, and now I am caught. I am finished. I am going to be killed. But I don't want to die so soon. Please save me. Please help me. And Lord Jagannath said, don't worry. I will protect you. I will take care of you. Because you are my sincere servant, there has been some discrepancy, some fault, but we will do the needful. So next day in the morning, before all the other pujaris could get up, this pujari went and then woke up the deities. And to his surprise, he saw that there was long hair all around Jagannath. And he was so relieved. He said, I am saved now. And then he came out, closed the altar, and was sitting there with a big smile on his face, completely confident. So the king came, said, okay, so what about the hair? He said, you go in, you want to have darshan, you can go inside. And very confidently he sent the king inside. The king went in and he saw the hair was there. And he called this pujari and said, I thought you are just a liar, but now you have gone one step ahead that you have stuck false hair on Jagannath. And he said, this is not false hair, this is Lord Jagannath's hair. And the king said, I don't believe it. And I will just prove to you. And he went near the deity of Lord Jagannath and started pulling the hair, thinking that he must have stuck this hair with glue. But the hair would not come out. And the king used all of his strength and few strands of hair came out and also some drops of blood came out. And the king got bewildered. And immediately he looked at this pujari and said, my God, the Lord Jagannath has personally manifested this. And within moments, Lord Jagannath spoke up and said, my dear king, forgive this devotee, he must have made some mistake, but he is very dear to me. I am very pleased with him. Just forgive him. And immediately that pastime ended and the hair disappeared. So that was like a very special moment where the Lord manifested a certain pastime just for the protection of his devotee, because he saw that the devotee is very eager to serve him sincerely, and if he makes some small mistake, the Lord is willing to overlook that. Therefore, even in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna explains to Uddhav, Jata Shraddha Mat Kathasu Nirvin Atma Tvayodita. A sincere devotee may be practicing Krishna consciousness, may be following the rules and regulations, may be doing everything properly, but somehow there may be some discrepancy. Sometime he may not be able to follow the rules because of previous conditionings. There may be some mistake which he may commit. But that should not make a devotee feel morose. He should not become so disappointed that he loses his enthusiasm for practicing the principles of bhakti. So a devotee should remain enthusiastic in all circumstances, because if one becomes overly morose and disappointed, then he will not be able to follow even the regular principles of devotional service. Therefore, this principle should be understood, that Krishna is always bhavagrahi. He accepts the bhava. Kaviraj Goswami also describes about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kumanah sumanastvam hi yati yasya padabjayoho sumano arpanamatrena tam chaitanyam prabhum bhaje. If someone is kumana and he wants to become sumana, Sukumana means one whose mind is contaminated. So if we want to change and transform our contaminated mind and purify it, Kumanah sumanastvam hi yati yasya padabjayoho. So from a contaminated state of mind, if we want to have a purified mind, the process is very easy. All we have to do is approach the lotus feet of Sri Sri Gaurnitai. Yati yasya padabjayoho. If we accept shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, the purification is possible. But how do we approach the lotus feet? Because Krishna is Supreme Lord, it is so difficult to approach him. So kumanaha sumanastvam hi yati yasya padabjayoho. Sumano arpanamatram hi. So he uses a beautiful poetic allegory. Suman also means flower. So suman has two meanings. Suman means purified mind, and it also means flower in Sanskrit or Hindi. Pushpa, suman, all this refers to flower. So sumana arpanamatrena. If you just offer a flower to Krishna, then automatically we can be converted from being kumana to sumana simply by offering a sumana. So that is the mercy of the Supreme Lord, that he accepts the simplest offering from a devotee so that the devotee can be purified. Otherwise Krishna does not need anything, because the whole creation belongs to him. everything belongs to him. But all he is looking for is that feeling that, yes, I want to reciprocate with you. I want to please you. Like Srila Prabhupada was sitting at an airport waiting for a flight. And one devotee approached Srila Prabhupada and he said, Srila Prabhupada, when the day will come when we will have our own airport? And Prabhupada said, this is our airport. Everything belongs to Krishna and everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. All are his energies. So why are you thinking that this is something different from what we have? Only thing is, they don't know, but we know it. And we just have to use things in Krishna's service. So Krishna owns everything, proprietor of everything. He does not need anything. But we take certain aspects of his creation and offer it to him. He accepts it. So here, the third aspect is, first of all, Krishna knows the devotee's mind. Secondly, he wants to favor the devotee. And third, even if the devotee offers something and there is some discrepancy, some fault, Krishna is merciful enough to overlook that fault. And Krishna just accepts the bhava, the feeling with which that offering is made. Then one comes to the fourth stage, when Krishna actively plans to reciprocate with his devotee, help his devotee. So Krishna plans, and in this way, he wants to display his sincerity to the devotee that, yes, I want to please you, I want to help you. So now Krishna is looking at Sudama, and in spite of hearing all of these words from Krishna, Sudama bows down his head in shame. He is not willing to look at Krishna. So Krishna understands his mind, and Krishna thinks within his own mind that, oh Sudama, you have brought this flat rice with great love and devotion for me, but you are embarrassed to offer it to me. But I know that you do not have any desire for sense gratification, and hence I will fulfill all your desires to such an extent that even the greatest of demigods cannot imagine having such opulence as I am going to award you. So at this stage, Sudama has not even offered that chipped rice to Krishna. It is still in his bag. But because Krishna is all-knowing and he just considers the bhav of a devotee, Krishna has already planned what he is going to do. And therefore, a devotee should not be overly disappointed and morose and discouraged in his attempts, because many times Krishna has already planned certain benefits for us. He has already planned to give us his mercy, and he is just waiting for us to just go through our activities, and he is there. But sometimes a devotee becomes overly disappointed and gives up the process of Krishna consciousness, thinking that at this stage there is no hope for me. I am such a hopeless case that even Krishna can't do anything. But then we actually lose on the supremely all-merciful aspect of Krishna, because with our limited intelligence, our conception of mercy is very limited. And here, Krishna has already planned. He has decided what he is going to do. And so, he has decided to offer unlimited wealth, unlimited prosperity to Sudama. So in the purport, the acharyas ask this question, that if Krishna says in Gita, Ananyas chintayantumam yejana paryupasate, tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham, that I preserve what you have and supply what you lack, that Krishna says. So if Krishna has made this promise, then how can Sudama be so poverty stricken that he doesn't have even anything to eat? So Krishna has made this promise. So the acharya said there are two types of devotees. One is indifferent to sense gratification, and the other is inimical to sense gratification. He is totally averse to having any of the sense objects. So Sudama belonged to this category, just like Jada Bharat also belonged to this category. Averse to any sense objects, inimical to having any kind of sense gratification. But the other category is indifferent, just like Yudhishthir Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj. They had opulence, but they were not affected by that opulence. They were just trying to use that opulence in Krishna's service. So therefore, both of these categories of devotees are bona fide. And Krishna reciprocates with both of them. So here, Sudama has come here with this certain desire in his mind. And Krishna has understood that, and now he is planning to bestow his mercy. And now, the fifth stage is that Krishna actually acts to reciprocate. Now, all of these previous stages have come to the stage of action. So Krishna, in one instant, just puts his hand into the bag of Sudama and takes part of that flat rice, chipped rice in his hands, and immediately puts it in his mouth. And Sudama is astonished and bewildered and totally embarrassed. But Sudama snatches this offering and says, "Why are you holding this to yourself? And why are you not sharing this nectar with me?" And he just puts it in his mouth. And immediately, Krishna is fully satisfied. And Sudama is totally embarrassed by seeing that Krishna has taken this chipped rice, which is so cheap, which is not worth, which is not fit to offer to the Supreme Lord, the husband of the goddess of fortune. But it is already too late, because Krishna is eager to taste his devotee's offering. And therefore he just does not wait, but he actually acts. He does something substantial. Krishna is achyuta, infallible. When Krishna decides to do something, his actions are infallible. When Krishna decides to reciprocate with his devotee, it just does not remain in his mind. He actually reciprocates. And therefore, in this way, we find that the Supreme Lord is very, very merciful. We have the example in South India of the deity of Varadaraj Perumal, which is in Kanchipuram. So there was one great devotee of Varadaraj whose name was Arunalan, and he was a disciple of Sripad Ramanujacharya. So Arunalan was such a great devotee that practically every day he would make offerings to the Lord, and he would only eat the Mahaprasad remnants from the plate. They would be offering leaf plates to the Lord, and he would eat from that leaf plate. So one day, he took his prasad, and somehow his servant, by mistake, threw this leaf plate in a wrong place. And the pujaris, who would generally make the offering, picked up this plate, which was actually jhuta, and then made the offering to Lord in that jhuta plate, in the plate which was contaminated, in which he had actually taken prasad. And then after some time, the pujaris realized their mistake, that they had made an offering to Varadaraj Perumal in a plate in which Arunalan had eaten. And this was like a major disaster. It was like an offense. So immediately they closed down the temple and they started preparing to cleanse and purify the whole temple with cow dung and cow urine and everything. And as they started cleansing the temple, the Lord spoke up to the head pujari and said that for so many years you have been only offering to me direct bhoga, and I was always eager to taste the remnants of my devotee, and for the first time I have got this opportunity to taste the remnants of my devotee Arunalan, and rather than celebrating, you are creating a big hue and cry about it. Therefore, I order you to stop this cleaning thing and just make sure that Arunalan is again reinstated in his services. And I am most pleased to just honor his remnants. So this story is there in the Sri Vaishnava Shastras about how the Supreme Lord Varadaraj is eager to reciprocate with his devotee and taste his devotee's remnants. In Jagannath Puri also we have the example that there was one sweet maker who was a Muslim, and he had a shop exactly opposite Jagannath's temple. And in fact he was not allowed to enter into the temple. And Lord Jagannath knew that although he is a Muslim, from within the core of his heart, he had great feeling for him. So Lord Jagannath appeared in the dream of this sweet maker and told him that I want you to make a special kind of sweet which has not been seen or tasted on this planet before. And this is going to be a very special sweet which I love. But nobody is offering me this sweet. So then in the dream only he asked him, so if it has not been seen or heard before, how I am going to make this sweet? It is not possible. So the Lord said, I am going to reveal the recipe to you. And I will show you how to make that sweet. And within the dream, he explained to him all the different steps, how to make that sweet. And you know, all of you must have seen that famous sweet if you go to Jagannath Puri, that long sweet which is there. They call it khaja. And he told him how that sweet can be made in different layers. And he said, now you bring this whole box of sweets, whole basket of sweets, and bring it to me first thing in the morning because I want to taste it. And in fact, he said, this sweet is so tasty that I just love to eat it at any time, at any moment. And even at the point at which it is being made. And as soon as you take it out of that, you know, ghee, and you place it outside, at that time I just accept it. And all the shops all around Jagannath temple, I immediately will accept this as soon as it is made. So therefore it is called khaja. Khaja means just eat. As soon as you take it out, Lord Jagannath eats it. It's called khaja. And you see the shops all around Jagannath temple, you will see these sweets. But the first time this sweet was made, so this Muslim gentleman, he took this in a basket and he wanted to enter. But the guard stopped him. And the guard said, you can't enter. Because you are not Hindu. And what is your gotra? So if you go to Jagannath temple, they will always ask you at the gate, what is your gotra? What gotra you are coming from? And many times we go in yatra, you know, 700-800 devotees. So they know everyone is Hindu only, but still they will ask everyone their gotra. And Prabhupada has told us, what is our gotra? Achyuta gotra. So all the devotees say, Achyuta gotra, Achyuta gotra. I said, my God, such a big family is coming. But still they will ask everyone. Right. And Drutakarma Prabhu was telling that if the scientists go, they should say, what is your gotra? I said, monkey gotra, vanar gotra. Because they believe in Darwin's theory. So they will be caught at the Jagannath's temple. So they should answer like this. What is your gotra? Vanar gotra. So here, as soon as he went, he was asked, hey, you are not Hindu, how can you enter? So he said, Lord Jagannath has said that I should bring this sweet to him. He said, oh, Lord Jagannath has told you, right? And none of us, that you should bring this sweet for him. Just keep this here. And you are not going to enter this place. And as soon as he kept that box of sweets down, the guard started beating him up. And at that moment, suddenly from nowhere, a dog came. And the dog picked up one piece of this sweet and right from between the guard's legs entered inside. And the guards were feeling, my God, we didn't allow Muslim to enter, but dog entered. That is worse than that. And they started chasing this dog inside. And the dog was still having that khaja in his mouth. And the dog entered straight onto the altar. And the pujaris were chasing and they reached that altar. The dog disappeared, the khaja disappeared. And then the pujaris were wondering what happened. And Lord Jagannath spoke. He said, I personally made this arrangement because I was so desperate and hungry to eat this khaja and you guys were fighting outside and stopping this offering from coming in. So I made this arrangement. But anyway, from this time onwards, I won't take the risk. As soon as this is made outside, I'm going to honor it there only. So as far as khaja is concerned, there is no need to be brought inside to be offered. All around, wherever the shops are, I will just accept it. So the Lord is eager somehow to reciprocate with his devotee. And because this devotee had that eagerness to offer something to the Lord, so the Lord personally made a plan. And eternally, through this sweet, he has immortalized this feeling that the Lord always reciprocates with the devotee's love. So in this way, the Lord knows, he favors, he overlooks the faults of a devotee. He plans to reciprocate with the devotees, and he also acts to show his love for his devotee. And these are the five aspects of how Krishna takes care of his devotee and reciprocates with his devotee. Now, Shukadeva Goswami is revealing that Krishna tastes that chipped rice. And when he tastes that chipped rice, what happens? So many people say, okay, you're trying to satisfy Krishna, what will you gain? By chanting Hare Krishna, what will you gain? You're pleasing Krishna, you're pleasing the Lord, what will you gain? So there are two things which the Acharyas are revealing, and it is being described by Shukadeva Goswami in these verses. The first thing which happens is that Krishna is satisfied, and after tasting that, Krishna says, Nanu etad upanitam me paramam prinanam sakhe, that, oh my dear friend Sudama, by tasting this chipped rice, paramam purinanam, I have been satisfied immensely. And secondly, he says, tarpayanti angamam vishnum ete prithaka tandulaha. Tarpayanti mam vishwam. And by satisfying me, you have satisfied the whole universe. And therefore, everyone in this universe is satisfied and peaceful. So this is the first effect of satisfying Krishna, that one can please the entire universe. And people are talking about, the biggest problem everyone is talking about is conflict and violence. And there are conferences being held all over the world on peace. Peace conference, peace summit, peace this, peace that. But people do not know that in this simple pastime of Sudama offering a chipped rice to Krishna, the solution to world problems are there. And what is that? World peace. And most people can't relate to it. That what are you talking about? That this poor Brahman brings some chipped rice and gives to Krishna, and there is solution to world problem? Yes, Krishna is saying, tarpayanti angamam vishwam, ete prithaka tandula. This simple offering of chipped rice you have made to me, by this whole universe will be pleased. So there is world peace. And the second thing which happens is, as soon as Rukmini Devi sees this, immediately Krishna, what he does is, he takes the first, you know, morsel, and then is about to take the second morsel. And is about to take the second morsel, Rukmini Devi stops him and says, enough, my dear Lord. Please do not take the second morsel. Because simply by the fact that you have eaten one morsel, I am forced to serve this person and go to his home and make him fully opulent. But at least I have a chance of returning back. If you take the second morsel, I have to stay there only. And because I will be so obliged, please do not take the second morsel. And then, in one sense, she is also saying, Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur says, that your devotee has offered you with so much of love. If you eat everything, then what Mahaprasad remnants will remain for us to taste? But indirectly, she is telling her other friends that Krishna has already had too much of this hard chipped rice, and if he has more, his tender stomach will be upset. Therefore, I want to stop. So in this way, Rukmini Devi stops Krishna from honoring any more. And therefore, the second thing which is revealed here is तावत शरीर जगृहे हस्तम तत्परा परमेष्ठिन. दैट श्री और लक्ष्मी देवी और रुक्मिणी देवी बिकम्स ओब्लाइज्ड टू सर्व सच अ डिवोटी हु ऑफर्स एवरीथिंग टू कृष्ण. एंड देयरफॉर द सेकेंड प्रॉब्लम द होल वर्ल्ड इज डीलिंग विद इज पॉवर्टी. एंड सो एज सून एज वन सेटिस्फाइज कृष्ण देयर विल बी प्रॉस्पेरिटी. So therefore, we can see that through this pastime, two solutions, some of the biggest problems in the world are being revealed. How you can have peace, how you can have prosperity, simply by serving Krishna. Therefore, here, Sudama had the privilege of directly being in touch with Krishna. And therefore, Sudama could reciprocate with Krishna. But now Krishna is no longer present, in the sense that Krishna is present only in the form of his deities, in the form of his holy name. And therefore, if modern society has to progress in this direction, and they have to experience the benefits of peace and prosperity, then they have to reciprocate with Krishna in the form of his Krishna consciousness movement, in the form of devotees. And the same kind of reciprocation must be done with the devotees of Krishna, those who are representing Krishna, those who are representing the movement of Krishna. And then the same benefits can be held. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur reveals that the biggest problem in Kali Yuga is that although Krishna is willing to offer peace and prosperity to the whole world, and the devotees are the messengers of peace, chayeva karma sachiva sadhavo dinavatsala. Question is asked, who is greater, devotee or demigod? Demigod is greater or devotee is greater? So the answer is revealed, chayeva karma sachiva sadhavo dinavatsala. Devotee is greater than even demigod, because demigods are only known as karma sachiva. Karma sachiv, sachiv means secretary. So karma sachiv means one who keeps noting down all the various actions and reactions. So demigods are just carrying paper and pen and they are noting down, okay, he committed this sin, okay, he drank liquor, he smoked cigarette, he did this, he did that. So all the things are being noted down, the sins being committed by different senses. But they are not going to intervene and stop and try to transform and change your life. But the devotee, what he does is, these pages after pages have been noted down by the demigods about what has been done. So the devotee have the power to intervene in a conditioned soul's life and take those pages and tear them to pieces and say, all karma account finished. They have the power to write off that karmic account by the power of their connection with Krishna. Sadhavo dinavatsala. Simply by their power, just by intervening, they have the power to transform a person's life and make him change the direction of his life. Just like in Lilamrit, there is this nice story that Srila Prabhupada was giving an interview and he was speaking to someone. And as he was speaking to this gentleman, Prabhupada was eating an orange. And as the orange seed was coming in his mouth, there was one basket, waste basket kept in that corner, and Prabhupada was spitting. And that seed was going and hitting against the wall and falling into that basket straight. And Prabhupada, while speaking, was doing now and then, and it would go, hit against the wall, fall in the basket. And this gentleman was totally impressed with this. That how every seed is falling straight into that basket. And Prabhupada was speaking philosophy, but he was not hearing the philosophy, he was just watching the trajectory. Oh, this is just going right in. My God, this person is amazing. Now, this is just an ordinary activity. But when great devotees were fully absorbed in Krishna, even ordinary activities they perform have power to transform a person's heart and make him attracted. So we cannot take this as a standard preaching technique. that we carry a box of oranges with us in our preaching program. And before the lecture begins, start with orange and keep a basket. Nothing will happen. We'll just collect lots of seeds. That's it. But here, a devotee's heart is filled with Krishna, and he's just permeated so much with Krishna that anyone just touches and comes in contact in any way, sadhavo dinavatsala. His whole karmic account changes. Everything changes, and that's how our life has also changed. We didn't plan from our childhood that we'll become Hare Krishna, and we'll have hairstyle like this, and we'll have clothes like this. No. But at a certain point of time, someone came into the life, and then everything changed. So therefore, that power of transformation is there. So sadhu, or a devotee, has that power to transform. And therefore, we may not have the honor or the facility and the opulence of reciprocating directly with Krishna in Dwaraka. But we have the facility to reciprocate with his devotees. And the devotees also have the same mood of accepting the bhava and the mood of a conditioned soul and engage him in Krishna's service. But Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says that the biggest problem for the conditioned soul is, although the sadhus are eager to reciprocate, the conditioned soul is averse to that reciprocation. He is averse to accepting this mercy. And he is always trying to avoid getting touched by Krishna's mercy. In Upadesha Upakhyan, in the stories which Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur writes, he gives one story that there was one family in which the husband was always eager to invite sadhus at home. And the wife was not at all favorable, and she was always feeling, why so many sadhus are coming? And she was feeling, my husband may become sadhu one day. So therefore she was always trying to avoid, but he would always keep inviting different sadhus. So one day the husband was away and some sadhus came to home. And the wife thought, today is a good day for me. At least this batch I will teach such a lesson that they will never come. So as soon as the sadhus came, she made them sit and said, please have a seat and I'll just come. And then she went inside, and from inside she brought the chapati making tongs. And she started hiding it under the sofa. And the sadhu said, hey, what are you doing? No, I am trying to hide these tongs in a very safe place. Said, why? I thought you are going to feed us and you are going to make chapatis for us. But why are you hiding this? She said, my husband is about to return, and my husband, you know, is very aggressive towards sadhus. And whenever sadhus come home, he takes these tongs of the chapati and, you know, heats it up and holds their nose and twists it like this. So therefore I want to make sure that you don't get hurt. But you don't worry, I'll hide it in a safe place. And as soon as they heard this, my God, this is a dangerous home where the host has this kind of a habit of dealing with sadhus. They said, okay, we'll see you some other time. And they got up and started moving. No, you don't worry. I will take care of this. Don't go. No, we are going. We are fasting actually today. And they immediately left. And as they were walking out, the husband was walking in. And the husband said, oh, sadhus, where are you going? Said, no, we are fasting today. We are going. And immediately they ran away. And the husband asked the wife, hey, what happened? Why are they leaving? They said, what to do? You know what, strange sadhus, I told them I'm going to feed you chapati. They said, no, we want the tongs. You know, we want to make the chapati making tongs and we want to do ourselves. So how I could give the tongs to them? So I said, you just go away from here. So he said, my God, just a simple thing like that, you could not give it to them? They were so eager to have that, I will go and give it to them. So he took the tongs from her and came out and started running behind them with the tongs in his hand. Please take these tongs. And the sadhus looked behind and saw this man, said, my God, this fellow is desperate. He's going beyond the home also. He's chasing us on the streets. And they just ran away, never to return back. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur writes that in Kali Yuga, the situation is such that people would rather chase the sadhus away and would not have anything to do with them. Chase the Hare Krishnas away. Even when we would go for book distribution sometimes in Bombay, you go to flats and then you ring the bell and they have the hole in the door and they look from inside. And as soon as they see shaved head and tilak from inside, they will say, we have all the books. We don't need your books. Go away. Get lost. They won't even open the door. So sometimes I would take some college student with me who would have proper hair and wearing normal dress, make him stand and ring the bell, and then they'll see some normal person. He'll open and I would be there. I would just put my hand in. Because nobody wants to have anything to do with Hare Krishna. They just want to chase them away. So what to speak of loving reciprocation and things like this? Therefore, this is one aspect of Krishna's reciprocation, that Krishna may not be personally present, but the devotees represent Krishna, and they give all the conditioned souls the chance to reciprocate so that the whole world can experience peace and prosperity. So now the third aspect comes, is how a devotee becomes attracted to Krishna. And I think that aspect we'll do in the evening today. So is there any question? We just had three sessions, so I thought we could just spend some time, 5-10 minutes. Anyone has any questions or any clarifications, any comments? Any of the senior devotees want to make some further comments? Yeah, Gauri Prabhu.
We've spoken a few times of devotees. One of them is repulse.
Yeah.
Aversion to material, and one is indifference. So sometimes we hear that repulsion is also, it's another response to material nature. So one's still responding, maybe sometimes we say it's just the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
So is Krishna, what would you say, viewing these devotees as equal status, or is there anything better in being indifferent rather than being repulsed?
Yeah, in this purport, Srila Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur gives the two examples for one who is indifferent and one who is inimical, he says. Inimical and indifferent. So the example of Jada Bharat is given, and the explanation given is that some devotees, based upon their psychophysical nature and preference, they just want to lead a very simple life and not have any of these material assets at all. That's their preference. So it is not that they recommend that everyone should do, but as a personal preference, they would rather have that kind of a lifestyle. And Sudama also was belonging to that category. And towards the end of this pastime, Srila Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur explains, that we'll discuss in the evening also, but since the point has come, I'll make the point now, that Krishna could detect a slight tinge of a feeling within the heart of Sudama, that I am so renounced, I am leading such a simple life, I don't need anything. I can live life without any of these assets. And even in renouncing, sometimes there can be pride. And Krishna could see just that little tinge of a feeling. And so he decided that, let me make this Sudama humble by giving him opulence. So this was the mood in which Krishna reciprocated, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. So by giving him opulence, he was making him humble, which for most people in Kali Yuga may appear to be strange. I said, what kind of philosophy is this? I said, anyway, Hare Krishnas are always strange. We can never figure out what they do and what they think and what their logic is anyway. You know, someone kills their father and the son is offering garland to the killer. That, please, Narsingadev, accept it. Well done. So people can't understand various aspects of our philosophy, and therefore to think that Krishna was trying to make Sudama humble by offering him prosperity is also a strange concept, but this was like his preference. So devotees don't recommend this and they don't preach about it, but certain people will always have this kind of a mood, and therefore in modern times we see that certain bona fide Babajis, they would lead that kind of a lifestyle in Vrindavan or Mayapur. That's where the Babajis come, you know, and like if you read about Vamsidas Babaji and all these Babajis, you know, Vamsidas Babaji would take raw bangan. What do you call bangan? Eggplant. He would take that and, you know, offer it to his Gopal or Gauranithai, and then he would eat that. I mean, totally avdhut and having a very strange lifestyle and totally renounced, not having any possessions. So they were on that platform and they had a certain preference of living life like that, but that's not generally recommended. But seeing that, many other Babajis, many other people with material desires started imitating, and they also started misusing that facility of being in white, being in holy place, but enjoying sense gratification. So when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came, he thought that sannyas has four levels: kutichak, bahudak, parivrajak, and sannyas, and paramahams. So the Babaji are actually supposed to be the paramahams level, where they are beyond the bodily concept and in pure devotional service. They are nityalila pravish. They are like participating in the pastimes of the Lord at that level. And many others who are not on that platform are wearing the similar dress, but secretly enjoying sense gratification. But because of this dress being same, nobody is able to detect. So he said, okay, now everyone claims to be at Paramhams level. I will bring another level by which you will be forced to come down. So he introduced the Parivrajakacharya level. And so he introduced the saffron color cloth, the sannyas danda, and the sannyas ashram was introduced by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur so that the Babajis could come down from Paramahams level to Parivrajak level. So it was an act to increase humility. So therefore the origin of the sannyas ashram in contemporary times, in our own sampradaya, in our own line of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was so that people could become more humble. Because they were claiming to be paramhams, beyond all rules, all regulations. And no one should ask any questions. Said, okay, come down to parivrajak level where there is accountability, where there are certain rules and regulations. And that is generally the recommended procedure, that one acts under the varnashram, follows rules and regulations. But few highly transcendental personalities, they will have their own ways of, you know, doing things, and that is seen as a personal preference, not the general recommendation. And, you know, one devotee approached Prabhupada and he said, I've gone to the doctor and doctors have detected some kind of disease and I'm going to die within a few months. I want to go to Vrindavan. Give me Babaji Diksha. Prabhupada said, you're not going to last as a Babaji. He said, anyway, I'm going to die. So whether I'm pure or not, let me go there. I'll keep chanting 192 rounds and I'll leave my body in Vrindavan. And the doctor's report show I hardly 2-3 months left. So Prabhupada actually gave him permission. And he went to Vrindavan. And then he stayed there and he was having his kuti and he was chanting 192 rounds or whatever. But after 3 months he saw his health is improving, you know, in Vrindavan. And rather than the disease increasing, he thought that what's happening. So then he went to the doctors in Delhi. And the doctor said, no, this was a wrong report. Everything is all right with you. He never returned back to Vrindavan. Took the next flight out of Delhi. Nobody knew what happened to him after that. That was the end of his Babaji Leela. So it is not so easy. So therefore, the general recommendation is to be in the Sangha of devotees and practice Krishna consciousness normally. And for a grihastha, he has to maintain his family. You can't be inspired by Sudama Leela and say that I'm resigning tomorrow. Let us follow in the footsteps of Sudama. Right? So that time Dwarka was there and Krishna was there. So now you have only manor. So you can't come to the manor and ask that, you know, deities, please give me something. That reciprocation is not possible. We have to be practical. So that is what is expected, that we follow the rules and regulations of our recommended varna properly, follow all the duties, take up responsibility and not be irresponsible. But some specific devotees will have this kind of feeling of their mood in which they want to worship and please the Lord, in which they feel that we just want to focus our complete attention on the Lord in this fashion. So they do not utilize any of these assets, which can be used in Krishna's service just as a personal preference. Like even among Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's disciples, there are other examples like Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, who spent his whole life in Pavan Sarovar, chanting all day and night. And in fact, when he was in the Gaudiya Math, during Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's time, the other brahmacharis were complaining, this brahmachari doesn't do any service. Only thing he does is takes the mala and goes on chanting morning and evening. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said, do you know what a difficult service that is? If you don't believe, put an advertisement in the Amrit Bazar Patrika. And they put actually an ad in the Amrit Bazar Patrika in Calcutta. Wanted someone to stay in the temple and chant for 14 hours. Hare Krishna. He'll be provided food and clothing. And the advertisement stayed for 1 month. Not a single person responded. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said, just see, we are offering free food, free shelter, free clothing. But for that they have to chant Hare Krishna also, freely. But that's not possible. It's not so easy. So Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj was also like very special. And you know, he was in the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur only. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was the foremost amongst those who was introducing Yukta Vairagya, how to utilize things in Krishna's service. In fact, the way Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur revolutionized preaching, he gave the form to preaching as we see it now. Took the concepts from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and applied it so systematically. He had such a network all over India. He was receiving bullock carts filled with mail every day at Navadvip. Huge bullock carts would come into Navadvip, and that bullock cart would be filled with letters which he was receiving. Just seeing that, the British government opened a post office at Navadvip to deal with Bhaktisiddhanta's mail. That's how the first post office started. It was exclusively to deal with the mail of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. And his disciple is Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, but his mood was just bhajan. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he could see that he is a genuine case. He is not show bottle. He is a genuine case. He has a genuine taste. And I should respect his mood, and we should allow him the facility to do in this particular exceptional case. So it's not a general recommendation, but certain, as they say, virla jiv, very, very rare souls who will have these kind of preferences, they may appear, and that kind of mood may be respected if it is really genuine. Like that. So so we'll stop here. Jai Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Dai Gaur Premanande.